Hello and welcome to the Mariner, and welcome to the solar eclipse, which is passing across North America today. In fact, down in Texas and that way, they have already had it. It's already passing now across the country. As I record this about midday, we've only got about 3.5 hours to wait here in Nova Scotia, which is at the far end of its track across the country, the far northeast, having started a number of hours ago in the southwest. So what exactly is going on? For most people, I think we understand, okay, the moon is going to get in front of the sun. If you are of the opinion that the world is flat, this could be very confusing and you will not have a model that adequately explains what's going on here. But for the rest of us who think that the world may well be a ball, it's absolutely something which is understood and has been for a very long time. We're going to dive in just a little bit today and have a look at some of the ways that solar eclipses have affected human history and the way that they've been responded to previously, how they're being responded to on this one here now in 2024. This won't be a very long episode because you'll probably have to go and have a look at it yourself if you're in North America, and I certainly am in a couple of hours. So we'll skip along through this one, see what we can learn, and hopefully there's something here which can bring a little bit of extra joy to it. You know, most of the people that are listening to this podcast, I imagine, are dads, and dads need to be armed with useful information and trivia with which to keep their family entertained on the way there, on the way back, and for many years to come, which of course will be how long you'll be referring to this to. So without any further ado, let's jump in. I would like to remind you, please, to have a look at patreon.com/themariner, and for $5 a month, you can help support the podcast. So when did we first start noticing that intermittently the sky might go scarily black? Well, it was obviously quite a long time ago. For the longest time, the solar eclipse, the lunar eclipse, all these kind of things were just odd things that happened. Imagine that, you know, it's bright sunshine here in Nova Scotia today. I was just sitting out the back here with Kat having a cup of tea and a slice of toast for our lunch while Isaac sleeps. And it's a glorious day. It shouldn't be anything going wrong here. Isaac will get up in a couple of hours, about an hour before the eclipse. If we didn't know it was coming, we would be about to have the most mythological, the most mythical afternoon we've ever had, I guess would be the way to put that. As suddenly the sky went black, we'd be talking about it for generations thereafter. But as it is, it's something we completely understand, and we are able to schedule our day around it. When did that first happen? Well, the very first time that a solar eclipse was calculated was in 585 BC by Thales, who was a Greek philosopher. And it was one of the most groundbreaking moments. We were able to demonstrate the predictability of celestial events. They had got on top of the fact that it was the planet that was going around the sun. They got on the fact that it was the moon going around the planet. And then it was a question of mechanics as to how to step forward. You might remember that we did that a long time ago. E is for estimated position error as part of the ABC of sailing. We were talking about the fact that they had done experiments where they'd dug deep vertical shafts into the ground and then were able to note exactly when the sun was overhead and then note the fact that it was at a different time to some other place on the planet nearby, near enough that they could make the kind of calculation they needed to make. But without having a theodolite or a sextant or a backstaff or any of the stuff that came later on, just a hole in the ground, they were able to know, oh, the sun is here now and then the sun is there later. And that's the beginning of longitude. It's the beginning of all kinds of navigation. And our understanding of the moon, obviously, we know from stuff we've read that Slocum was going around the world and famously doing lots of lunar plots. The accuracy of the moon's movement around the Earth has been well known because it's so essential to us for tides. We need to know where the moon is, how it's going to affect the tides. So when we start to see, oh, okay, hang on, the sun is doing this and the moon is doing that, with the basic mechanics we had, it only took people 2,500 years ago to come up with that level of technology. I think I would be very hard pressed to somehow sit down and predict the moon. Even if I was given 10 years to observe everything that was going on around me at all times, I suspect it might be a little bit difficult for me to move that forward in my mind. I'm not that guy, but when those people who did have the mathematics, did have the intellect to be able to put that together, it suddenly created this tool for people working at sea, working the land, to understand what is going to happen next. Now, there was something interesting that happened at 585, because whilst he was predicting what was going to happen. Meanwhile, just slightly across the continent, we have the Battle of Halys, which was one of the earliest recorded events that was significantly impacted by a solar eclipse. It was also known thereafter as the Battle of the Eclipse. The battle was between the Medes and the Lydians in what's now Turkey. Their battle suddenly came to an understandably swift stop when the sky was darkened, and they took it, of course, to be a divine bad omen, and instead they sat down and negotiated a peace. So that was Turkey. And in Greece, they were predicting it. So it kind of gives you an idea of what's going on. A couple of hundred miles over here, it's the end of the world. God is angry with us. And over there, the beginning of science and the beginning of the understanding of the mechanics of the natural world, rather than the lore and the legend and the myths that had surrounded this kind of thing up until that point. You know, in Vietnam, they thought it was a giant frog that was devouring the sun. The Vikings thought that a wolf was eating the sun. It was something that was extraordinarily nerve-wracking for those involved. Because you think, if you've seen a solar eclipse before, you'll know that like all the shadows under the trees get very strange. Like the world has a slightly odd, it's not just nighttime, it's something slightly different. And for those who, of course, that were affected by it, I'm sure it had a profound effect. So the prophecy and the divine message and what have you that was part of the solar eclipse before started to slide away, certainly in the halls of science and of education. But for many people around the world, even now today, there will be people who observe this who have absolutely no clue what's going on. I mean, like that their people, their nation don't know. Down in the South Sea Islands, I'm sure a lot of people who may well have seen it will be pretty freaked out. They're having the kind of like divine day. Meanwhile, across the US, something completely different is happening. We've got a kind of insanity that's sweeping the nation, but it's excitement, and that's a positive thing, but an excitement that may yet cause problems. We could delve into that for a second. You might well be aware of the fact that many places across the US and Canada have actually declared a state of emergency, and they've got the National Guard in, they've got their police and fire departments and their EMTs all standing by. They've asked people to get in a couple of weeks of food and water, which of course has got the tinfoil hat community very, very on edge, hyper-vigilant. Are they trying to do a dry run for martial law was one of the chats that I read on Reddit. I think the thing that we have to bear in mind is that there's about 200 million people are suddenly within a couple of hours of being able to drive right into the shadow of where the eclipse is going over in full totality, that the sun will be completely eclipsed by the moon. 200 million people, I'm not sure they're all going to be leaving. Maybe people got to like go to work and they have responsibilities and things. But theoretically, that many number of people could be on the move. And it is interesting to note that in previous solar eclipses, there has been a big uptick in car crashes, not least because a lot of people are trying to make their way to where they want to be, but also they're incredibly distracted. If you are on the road and are not quite aware of the time and suddenly the sky goes dark, then you're kind of back to the battle of the eclipse, right? You're just like, okay, I'll stop driving. I'll never drive again. But do try and be a little safe this afternoon. I'm releasing this podcast just before it happens, just a couple of hours before. I reckon that people will remember the last thing they the last thing they heard. Isn't that what they tell us at school? The last thing you hear before you leave the classroom is the most important thing, the thing you're most likely to remember. But as you're driving, just be very aware of the fact, as always with driving, the person ahead of you is an idiot and the one behind you may well be looking up for the solar eclipse. So keep yourself and your family safe. Okay, but historically, the solar eclipses have also been something where we have learned a lot from them happening. The ability to predict them and predict them in a positive way, like, hey, I have developed science. Here it is. This is a thing that is useful. That as a step forward, rather than some people knowing it's going to happen and other people not knowing it's going to happen and it being unfairly used as a lever against those people who are literally in the dark. I'm thinking specifically of a famous thing that happened with Christopher Columbus. He was on his fourth voyage over to the New World, and he used his knowledge of a forthcoming lunar eclipse, not a solar eclipse, but a lunar eclipse, to his advantage. He was stranded in Jamaica and in need of supplies, which the locals didn't want to help him with. Well, what he did is he said that his God was angry, and as a sign of displeasure, would make the moon appear inflamed with wrath was his terminology. And then when the lunar eclipse happened, as predicted for him, the frightened locals then hurried to provide him and his crew with everything he needed. I think it would be worthwhile doing a bit of a deep dive on Christopher Columbus, because I think he's got a bad rap in recent years, and it's not quite as cut and shut as you might think. But certainly on that occasion, bit of a dick. But then I have no idea what the exact situation was. Maybe it was life and death and they weren't going to help him out. But maybe they were getting a bit nervous about helping him out. It didn't seem to go very well with them thereafter. So science suddenly being able to use to prove the solar eclipse was going to happen. Brilliant, because we then start to say, hey, our understanding of lunar and solar mechanics are dead on. Great for navigation. People are still using it as a leverage against those who are not as educated, a bit of a dick move. But the moment where it really kind of comes good is in 1919, when probably one of the most famous scientific events associated with the solar eclipse happened, which was when Einstein's theory of general relativity was somewhat proved by a total eclipse. So there was a total eclipse on May the 29th in 1919, and observations were made then of starlight bending around the sun. Because suddenly the sun was blocked out by the moon, they were able to get a proper look at the sun and then be able to see that indeed gravitational bending of light was happening. And we've had our first empirical validation of Einstein's theory, which fundamentally changed our understanding of gravity and the fabric of space-time. So the other thing that happened, of course, with the solar eclipse is that we were able to understand that there was a corona on the sun, which you can't see normally, but with the moon blotting it out, we can suddenly see the corona around it. So we've used the solar eclipse to kind of test drive our science, and we've used it to beat the natives over the head with the science stick, which we keep tending to do, I think. But later we've used it to actually like help ourselves step forward, understand the nature of the sun's construction, its structure rather, and then work out like, and we saw that recently, right, with the James Webb Space Telescope. Suddenly we saw like a gravitational lensing of galaxies and things. Like, we kind of knew that like 100, 105 years ago. The James Webb really helped us see that in a very, very clear fashion. But suddenly, yeah, 100 years ago, 1919, we're able to prove what is, of course, one of the most important theories that kind of undergirds our world at the moment. It fashions a lot of the understanding we have for what's next for humans when we attempt to leave this planet, because suddenly we find out, oh, maybe we can't get close to the speed of light. Maybe that's going to be a problem as we approach the speed of light and everybody here gets older and older and older. You want to be very aware of who you're coming home to, because you might be coming home to your granddaughter the age of your grandmother if you take a long trip. So I guess I should throw in here just a quick descriptor of what's happening, actually happening, in case there's other people in the car while you're listening to this or something who don't know as much as you do. We've got these three large bodies that we look at really all the time when we're looking out from Earth and kind of note what they're doing. The moon, which is so close, obviously, that it affects a lot of what's going on. The sun, we can see that's pretty important to us. And as an aside, Jupiter, because Jupiter has a massive gravitational field and affects everything else that's going on around us. But the moon and the sun, certainly as sailors, are things that are very, very important. Well, what's happening today is in those two separate systems of the planet going around the sun and the moon going around the planet, the sun and the moon are going to line up exactly. And when that happens, the moon is going to pass completely over the face of the sun. We know also, of course, the moon is dragging the water around the world. So let's have a quick chat about that. We did a podcast quite a long time ago now about the moon and everything to do with the moon. And it certainly jacked up my understanding of what's going on. Have a look for that if you want. It's, I think, episode 16. It's called Lunar Exploration. And in that, we learned a couple of interesting things about the moon. The first one is that the moon is kind of egg-shaped. And it's the big butt of the egg that's pointing towards us. The smaller part of the moon is actually deeper crust and is away from us. But we always see like one part of the moon. The moon does not rotate. And it doesn't rotate because the moon came together by basically lumps of rock. And we're not sure really whether it was created from a big lump of our planet that was carved out when we were hit by something else billions of years ago, or if it's something that has come into the solar system and somehow just managed to slide past Earth in a way that it got gravitationally attracted and then captured by the Earth, or indeed if it was just accretion from the the debris disk essentially around the forming planet, which over time self-molded through gravity into the roughly spherical shape that we see in front of us now. But I say it's slightly egg-shaped, and because it was brought together by just a accumulation of rocks essentially in space being molded together by gravity, it's not weighted. It's not a balanced form. It doesn't spin, so there's no reason why it would need to be. So we have like the bottom of the Weeble, essentially the bottom of the egg shaped is heavier, and because of that it has over time become gravitationally locked to us. The heaviest part is aimed towards us, essentially like down towards the planet, and it has no reason to want to spin around on its axis because you'd be out of balance. It's just the unbalanced heavy weighted part is pointed towards us, and the back of it has about a 50 kilometer thicker crust that is pointing away from us. So the back of the moon is a bit more egg shaped than the bottom. We're looking at the fat bit at the bottom. Now, when the moon first formed, or it first came into our orbit, or whatever we want to say, it's very, very likely from everything that we know about the moon, looking at how fast it goes around the planet, the fact that it is changing its distance from the planet slowly over time, what we think is that it started out a lot, lot closer to us. So at the moment, it's about 230, 240,000 miles away from the planet, nautical miles away from the planet. And we think that previously it was as close as 80,000. So at 80,000 miles, the moon would have looked a lot different than it does now. It would have looked a lot bigger. You think of like how big a supermoon is when the moon is very, very low. It's quite close to us. Suddenly you get kind of a lensing effect through the atmosphere, and you can get these big African kind of moons coming up, which are, it looks like twice the size it normally would do. But that's an optical effect. When it was four times closer, it would have been... it would have been enormous in the sky, like kind of Star Trek enormous in the sky, and it would have been going around us at four times faster. As it was going around us four times faster, we'd have had four tides a day, and at that point the gravitational effect on the moon would have been so big that the bulge of water, which is running around but kind of just slightly behind where the moon is relative to the planet's surface, kind of being the water's being pulled along behind the moon's gravity essentially, those tides would have been like a kilometer high. And there is some thought that this might well have been the point at which life got the helping hand it needed, that the moon itself might be some kind of positive effect on the development of life on this planet, because it's that drying out and getting mixed up process of the fluids that were on the planet, the primordial swamp being dragged around, dragged across the land sections, dragged across the ocean sections, completely drying out behind it because all the water is in the bulge, and then completely rushed over by the water. That kind of mixing and mashing of things might well have torn protein strands to a point that we'd get new and novel combinations, which might well be where life came from. So the moon itself may have been beneficial in that, but thank God that started to slow down, because that would just keep all life from ever developing to anything worthwhile if you get 1 kilometer tide coming over you four times a day. But because the moon is a giant heavy thing that's orbiting around the planet, what it's actually doing is it's slowly getting further away from the planet. It is slowly breaking out of the Earth's gravitational pull, which is why we think it's been formed at one point and then in the end will stop being part of the planet. It will rip itself away from the planet until one day far in the future it'll just continue on. It will not continue its circle around the planet or its orbit around the planet. It will just continue off into interstellar space. So where we are right now, we're at this like unbelievable coincidental moment, the one that again has the tinfoil hat theorists scratching their tinfoil hats. The moon is about 400 times smaller than the sun, but the sun is 400 times further away than the moon, which gives us this incredible situation where the moon absolutely blots out the sun. If the moon was closer or bigger, then the sun would disappear entirely. If the moon was much further away or somehow smaller, which is every other planet in our solar system has got much smaller moons around it than we do. We have an unbelievably large partner in this. And that moon, if it was smaller, it would pass across the surface of the sun to some degree or another, but we wouldn't get the eclipse that we know of. So we are here experiencing this at a very brief moment in time. It will get further away, will get smaller. And for our deep ancestors, like back millions of years ago, they would have had something where the moon just blotted out the sun and there was very little interesting to look at apart from it went to nighttime and then it stopped being nighttime. So Enjoy it. Just getting to see a solar eclipse is pretty odd anyway. It's a pretty weird thing. I think there's something very kind of primeval that starts to happen when you're under a full or near full a solar eclipse, because there's just some part of your brain which is very deeply tied into like the sun and what the sun is doing. And then when, you know, a giant wolf or a giant frog starts to devour your sun, like you start to feel a particular way about it, you know. So, but then when you realize that we are isolated also in time, that this is a very unusual thing to be here in the couple of million years whilst it's the exact size it is, 400 times smaller than the sun, 400 times closer than the sun, and that we get this wonderful effect. So we're unique in being able to see this. Now, from the point of view of safety, we should discuss that a little bit. For those who are going to go out and actually see this today, or anything else you have with this, like a very basic understanding of like how the world works is don't look at the sun. What can happen is that during a solar eclipse, you start thinking like, oh, that's pretty bloody interesting. That I'll take a look at that. This is like looking at someone who's just about to spark up with an arc welder, and you're looking like, oh, I wonder what he's going to do there. And then the power comes on, and that one little zap of electricity, which is making its way from the MIG onto the metal, is enough if you look at it for, you know, even small numbers of seconds, really, to be honest, like 20, 30 seconds looking at arc welding, you're going to have arc eye by the end of the day, which if you've not had it before, it's kind of like having sunburn on your eyes. And a comparable thing would be like somebody threw really hard through sand in your face. That's kind of what it feels like. If you just get a little bit, it's kind of gritty. But I actually had it once, and I had it from the weirdest thing. I got it from the ultraviolet water sanitizer thing, which is in your Rainfresh bug killer thing in your water system. Certainly here in North America, it's very common. It's a UV tube. The water flows past it, and the UV kills all the bugs that are in the water. Super easy, right? So I pull out the bulb to take a look at it, and for some reason, just don't engage the fact of like what I'm looking at. It's got that soft blue light, it's kind of cool, like, oh, this is this thing. Worst of all, I had my daughter Bella with me, and she's like, what's that? I'm like, oh, look, it's this thing. Well, that of course is a massive failure as a father to expose my little one to that kind of risk. I should have known better. It's just having a blank moment. Looking at those things, those UV lights, is the same as looking at the sun, is the same as looking at arc welding or MIG welding, whatever it is. And by the end of the evening, both of us had very, very sore eyes. And of course, I felt absolutely dreadful when I realized what had happened. And I'd also spent X amount of time complaining that somehow hot chili oil had got off something that was being prepared in the food and got into my eyes. And it wasn't my fault. It was everybody else's fault. And then I realized, like, oh, yeah, a couple of hours ago, I had us both looking at the Rainfresh UV filter thing. So be aware of the fact that this problem exists, and be aware of the fact that in this specific circumstance, it's going to go quite dark, and it's going to be very tempting if you've been using sunglasses, what have you, to take those off and look at the sun. It could be very tempting to, if you're using eclipse glasses, to take those off and look at the sun. But there's going to be a moment where the sun comes back around the other side of the moon, and you get this, what they call the diamond ring, where suddenly you get this like very bright flash of light that comes out over one side of the moon. And that alone is enough to give you very sore eyes. On top of however many minutes you actually get to witness the full solar eclipse for. So be very cautious. Eclipse glasses are being handed out every which way. They're made of like paper and card and little bits of plastic. Like, I'm not sure exactly how useful they're going to be if they give you full coverage, but you shouldn't be looking at the sun with anything other than, you know, proper protective equipment. A welding mask will work. Very heavy sunglasses will work. Like, I've looked up at the sun plenty of times with sunglasses on and not had the eyes burn out of my sockets. What I need to have is my sunglasses on at the moment the sun comes round the back of the moon, because I don't want to get that bright flash before I put my sunglasses on. So you will be wearing sunglasses at night momentarily. Make it work for you, make it your look, and then you've got that eye protection when the thing pops out the other side of it. You don't want to be going home in the car with people going, oh, my eyes are so sore, because they've essentially got arc eye. Now, in terms of people moving around, there's an uptick in injuries and deaths on the road around solar eclipse. So in terms of like managing your situation, be very aware of the fact that, you know, you want to be finished your trip to wherever you're going just before it starts getting crazy. Get off the road, because if it starts to happen and you're on the road, there's a very high chance of some kind of accidents happening. I would say, for having watched solar eclipses in other countries, look out for pickpockets as well, because everyone's going to be looking up and there's going to be those people who just nudge into and bump past and all the rest of it. They're there for something else. They don't care about the solar eclipse. They're interested in what's in your pocket. So gentlemen, wallets should be in front pockets in that kind of situation rather around the back. It's so easy to take your wallet out your back pocket. Don't let it happen. I'm sure it's not a big issue, but we have a situation where for some people, this will be a predatory opportunity rather than an exciting thing to share with your kids and family. Now, what other things will be happening at the same time? There's this word lunatic, which means literally to be affected by the moon, the lunar, right? So lunacy, lunatic, all those things. And there is a massive increase for EMTs, fire and police around the time of full moon, where people's behavior seems to change considerably. Now, why do I bring this in? Well, people's behavior is going to change. It's a solar eclipse, absolutely. But we'll see also that animals will change their behavior. We might not see it so much necessarily around the full moon, but this is going to be one where things are going to get very different. Birds will be very affected by it. You'll see also, as I said before, that the shadows underneath the trees will get very interesting. You've got little ones, get them to have a look at the shadows under the trees. You get this like weird, I don't know, kind of, everything looks suddenly like dappled and the edges of the shadows are different. It's just very sort of subtle change. From the animal's point of view, there's quite a lot going on because you've suddenly got these two large celestial bodies overhead and they do exert a bigger force on the planet. We know that the water on the planet is rushing around trying to follow after the moon. If you're a sailor, you know also that there's a combining effect between the sun and the moon and that you get very big spring tides when the sun and the moon line up. Well, they're definitely going to be lined up during this this total solar eclipse, right? So you're going to get very high tides. You might get unusual activity from birds, from insects. This year also, we've got these two cicada broods, which are coming out, right? Where they have these very long periods of time that they go underground for to avoid predators. Predators are unable to base their year around these prey items, cicadas. If the cicadas only come out every couple of years, and different types of cicadas have different periods they're underground. So we've got two separate kinds of cicadas coming up this year. Hopefully they don't all come out at the same time the solar eclipse is on us. We're going to just have to declare the apocalypse started and go from there. But insects on a whole, animals, even domestic animals may well have problems. I don't know if this will affect whales at sea. I literally have no knowledge on that, actually, if they'll be somewhat confused by what's happening. The electromagnetic field of the planet, I imagine, will be somewhat affected by this. But there's going to be subtle things going on around. But I would bear in mind the word lunatic. And whenever the moon is involved, humans go a little nutty. So watch out for folks around you, but also watch out. Dogs, animals may be a little bit more nervy than they might otherwise be. Treat them like it's a kind of a fireworks night or something like that, and then they're not getting distressed or getting themselves into a pickle out and about on the streets whilst there's hundreds of mad humans around doing whatever they're doing. Now, I guess the last thing is looking at where exactly people are going to be seeing this. The path of totality, like where it's a complete solar eclipse, we say it goes right from the southwest of the US right to the top of Newfoundland here in the northeast of the continent. But either side of that, for a considerable period of time, you're going to get, considerable area for a set period of time, you're going to get like a partial eclipse. And here in Nova Scotia, we'll see quite a bit. I think we'll see maybe 75 or 80%. I'm looking forward to that. We've got some family coming over and we know where we're going to sit, and it's a beautiful sunny day. And it's going to be very interesting to share that. The next one coming around is going to be on August the 23rd, 2044. And at that time, the path of totality will only cross like three US states. So if you're going to see this, you're going to kind of see it today. So if you're in work or wherever, take some time off, work out when it's going to happen for you, and then hopefully you can enjoy seeing that. But of course, they are happening all the time, all over the planet. It's just they're not going to be necessarily happening here. So if you miss this one, it's an interesting way to think up an adventure you might want to have later on. So as we wrap this up, I'm just going to do half an hour today because I realize everyone's going to, who might be interested in this, is actually going to be probably heading off to have a look at it very, very soon. If you haven't already, just watch the safety, watch the eye safety, be situationally aware for the people around you in the crowd, and that, keep that word lunar and lunatic in your mind, and be very careful driving to and from places. I don't think it's the beginning of the apocalypse or a test drive for martial law, which some of the tinfoil hat people have been flouting, but I think there is certainly, whenever humans get together and start looking up at the sky, definitely opportunities for folks to take advantage of it or get a bit silly and problems ensue from that. So keep safe wherever you are. But yeah, enjoy the day. Hey, a total solar eclipse. We know it's coming. We know what's going on. It's a pretty fun thing to be getting involved in, and I hope you enjoy it. So wherever you are today, whatever you're doing, stay safe, stay sound, and I'll speak to you very soon in the next one. Cheers.